On this first day of February 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 31, The Disappearance of Lord Sri Krishna, text number 6. Lokabhiramam svatanum dharana dhyana mangalam yoga dhanana yagneya Tungva dhamma vishat swakam. Translation: Without employing the mystic Agnei meditation to burn up his transcendental body, which is the all-attractive resting place of all the worlds and the object of all contemplation and meditation, Lord Krishna entered into his own abode. Purport. A yogi empowered to select the moment of leaving his body can cause it to burst into flames by engaging in the yogic meditation called Agnei, and thus he passes into his next life. The demigods similarly employ this mystic fire when being transferred to the spiritual world. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely different from conditioned souls like yogis and demigods, since the Lord's eternal spiritual body is the source of all existence, as indicated here by the words, Lokabhiramam Svatanum. Lord Krishna's body is the source of pleasure for the entire universe. The word dharana dhyana mangalam indicates that those trying for spiritual elevation through meditation and yoga achieve all auspiciousness through meditation on the Lord's body. Since yogis are liberated simply by thinking of Lord Krishna's body, that body is certainly not material and therefore not subject to burning by mundane mystic fire or any other type of fire. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is the disappearance day of Sri Madhvacharya, and we will hear a little bit about him at the end. So this is the actual verse in which Krishna disappears. The chapter is called The Disappearance of Lord Sri Krishna, and now he is disappearing and returning to his own abode from whence he came. Oops, I'm sorry. There's another paragraph here. I thought that was the end. Read this. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reminds us of Lord Krishna's statement in the 11th canto, chapter 14, verse 37. Vani madye smadeid rupam mamaita dhyana mangalam. Within the fire, one should meditate upon my form, which is the auspicious object of all meditation. Since Lord Krishna's transcendental form is present within fire as the maintaining principle, how can fire affect that form? Thus, although the Lord appeared to enter the mystic yoga trance, the word adagba indicates that the Lord, since his body is purely spiritual, bypassed the formality of burning and directly entered his own abode in the spiritual sky. This point has also been elaborately explained by Srila Jiva Goswami in his commentary to this verse. So, this is, as I mentioned, the verse in which Krishna actually disappears from the sight of everyone on the planet. If you recall in the previous verses, he's kind of prepared that disappearance. First thing he did was arrange for the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, self-annihilation, which itself is kind of a shocking thing, but you realize, well, they also constituted, in Krishna's eyes, a burden to the earth, because all the enemies were killed, all the demons were finished, but the Yadus themselves were very powerful, and Krishna felt that they could also become a burden on the earth. Plus, they were all demigods, you know, and who had appeared anyway for his pastimes, and so they returned to their planets, and then he told Dwarka to go to Dwarka and tell everybody else to get out, because as soon as he left, that Dwarka would be inundated. And it's interesting that even today they find little remnants of the walls of Dwarka in the ocean, where near the present day Dwarka. So there's indication that that city was there, even archaeological evidence now. But one of the things that's interesting about this verse, if you get into the Sanskrit, now there are things in the Bhagavatam and in the other Vedic literatures that seem to imply some mundane aspect of Krishna. There was one point at which it's described in the Mahabharata that Mahavishnu took two hairs from his body, a white hair and a black hair from his head, and they became Krishna Krishna and Balaram. So that requires a lot of explanation. That isn't so, you know. But it's mentioned there, so you need an understanding. Now, in this particular verse, if you look at it, those who are familiar with Sanskrit, there are two ways of breaking this verse. Sometimes we have, like, we're familiar with this Sanskrit tendency sometimes, that it's a little bit ambiguous because of the way the sandhi works. Sandhi is where the two words come together. Like here we have the word agneya and adogva. You see that? At the end of that line, they're all combined there, but the word is agneya and adogva. And that word dogva, means burning. But you have an ah at the end of the first line, combined with the double A at the end of the agneya. So someone could say, well, wait a minute, it says dogva. It doesn't say adogva. You see? You got three A's merged there. The two A's that make the long A at the end of agneya. And then you have another A for the adogva. But that A, which means just the opposite. In other words, one is burning and one is not burning. You understand? So our acharyas have explained it that way. This is why there's some, you know, explanation here. It's not so obvious. That he didn't use this mystic power of self-immolation, if you will. A yogic power. And he left in his self-same body. Now, for those familiar with the rest of the Bhagavatam and the rest of Vedic literature, that makes perfect sense. How could Krishna's body burn? But if he wanted to, he could. He could have. So some may interpret this to say, well, he did burn. And therefore, there's some mundane aspect to his body. So Krishna does that sometimes. He seems to act materially so to bewilder the atheists. So the atheists will become bewildered. But the devotees know, because they're familiar with those who know Krishna, namely the advanced acharyas, what's what when these anomalies or ambiguities occur. So this process of self-immolation, we've experienced that before in the Bhagavatam. We've seen it. What kind of two instances come to mind? Dhritarashtra. You remember Dhritarashtra? When Dhritarashtra was chastised by Vidura, his half-brother, the most exalted of the brothers, actually. Well, Pandu is also very exalted. But Vidura was the son of a maidservant. So he was never given the same honor as Pandu or Dhritarashtra. But Vidura was actually the greatest devotee. And he came back from his tour, and he came back, and the battle was over, the battle of Kurukshetra. And all of Dhritarashtra's sons, the foremost of whom was Duryodhana, who had instigated the whole battle, tried to usurp the kingdom. They had all been killed, all the sons. Who were the sons killed by? Every single son, 100 sons, was killed by? Bhima. Bhima had vowed to kill them all, and he did. Plus, the whole, you know, battle had been won by the Pandavas, and they were enthroned. And Dhritarashtra, he wasn't on the battlefield. He was blind. He was back in the palace getting all of the play-by-play, if you will, from Sanjay, right? So all of his sons were killed. His attempt to usurp the throne and sponsor his son was finished. So instead of, you know, going off to the forest, he took shelter of Yudhishthira, who honored him. He was the last senior left, you know, of that generation. And so he gave him a place in the palace, and they gave him honor, and they maintained him. He was there with his wife, Gandhari. Now, Gandhari was special. She was the emblem of chastity. And what she did was, because Dhritarashtra was blind, when she was married, she took blindfold and she voluntarily became blind. So she wouldn't have something over on her. Yeah, it's amazing. So anyway, she was there with her husband, you know, and Dhritarashtra was there, elderly. So Vidura comes and he says, "What are you doing? You know, first of all, you're getting old, your liver is weak, you know, you're spitting up blood, and you're going to pass out of your body at any time, and you're living at the at the behest. You're eating scraps from the table of Bhima, who killed your 100 sons. In other words, he's trying to get his Kshatriya blood going. This is very dishonorable. Here is, you know, he tried to usurp the kingdom, and Yudhishthira was so dharmic, he's so religious, that he's going to take care of him because he's an elder. But really, he was, you know, declared enemy. So Yudhishthira, his enemy was never known. He never feels enmity toward anyone. So he took him in, you know, like that. But really, it was a very shameful condition to be in. So after that, Dhritarashtra, you know, he took it to heart, and he left the kingdom, just walked out. Sanjay was crestfallen. He couldn't find his master, you know. But there they were, Gandhari and Dhritarashtra. They just left. Vidura also left, you know. So they went into the forest, and then Dhritarashtra meditated, you know, and by his yogic power, he self-immolated. And Gandhari entered into the fire. This is called the Sati, right? Because Sati was the first. She was the other one who self-immolated by mystic power, by pranic energy, by manipulating the prana. You can do that. Now, here's something really far out. Those of you, I don't know, has anyone ever heard of the spontaneous combustion? Where people, just ordinary people watching TV, right? All of a sudden, boom, you know? And it's very strange. The police come, you know, they open up the mobile home, you know, that they're living in. And and there's a fire. Obviously, it was a fire, but nothing else is burned. There's just like a ashes, you know, or a greasy spot, you know, basically. And it's just, how did that happen? You know, there's obviously a very hot fire burned, but nothing else was burned because it was all internal. So how does that happen? I mean, these are not great yogis. These are like ordinary Joes, you know. So there's a certain way in which the prana energy is moving, and it's almost like, you know, if you pull the one-armed bandit enough, you know, eventually you get, so somehow or other by accident the right combination of air is moving created the fire, and boom, it happens. Occasionally it happens. It's happened more than once. The scientists don't know how it works, so it's a scientific process. And here it's described that this is a way in which yogis actually leave their body by their own will when they feel mature and they can go back to God or go to the heavenly planet, wherever they're trying to go. So, but the point is Krishna did not use that process. And one of the things that we learn from the Vedic literature, one of these wonderful little phrases, deha dehi vibhagoyam neshade vidyate kvachit. This is one of these phrases. So what does that mean? Deha dehi. So the deha is the body. The dehi is the one in the body, this, namely the soul. Vibhago means difference or separation. Now for us, first thing you learn is you're not the body. Right? There is certainly a difference. We hope so. Do we want to really think that we're our bodies? I mean, it's horrific to think like that. Most people are thinking like that. But the body is not the soul. So for us, deha dehi vibhago, yeah, it's true. But for Ishwara, for the Supreme Lord, we should never think that any time that there was a difference between his body and his soul. Prabhupada had this, Pete, remember this? Hare Krishna Prabhu. At the end of the ninth chapter in Bhagavad Gita, there's a very important verse all together. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. Mamavaisasi yukbhavam atmanam aparayana. It's repeated in the end of the 18th chapter, 1865. And what it means is, think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me. In this way, connected to me through bhakti yoga, you will certainly come to me. That's the meaning of the verse. So in that purport, Prabhupada describes, you know, all kinds of wonderful things that the acharyas have said, his own realizations. But he also has some very heavy criticism for another commentator on the Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't mention his name, but everyone who knows who it is. Dr. Radhakrishnan, who happened to be, I think, the president or vice president of India at one point, but he was also fancied himself a yogic scholar, a Bhagavad Gita scholar. So, historically, Prabhupada, when he was in India, after he had taken sannyas, or maybe not, maybe he was a vanaprastha, he was still involved with the Gaudiya Math. You know what the Gaudiya Math is? The Gaudiya Math. A math is what we have here. An ashram with a temple. Generally in India, ladies only there. So that's called a math. an ashram and a temple together. And so Bhaktisiddhanta had founded, by his great spiritual strength, 64 mats throughout India. And when he departed, it took some time, but the society eventually disintegrated. But before that happened, Prabhupada was very much involved with the Gaudiya Math. And at one point, he was managing an ashram, one of his godbrother's ashrams. He was off somewhere, and Prabhupada was staying there. So he was the leader, and there was a bunch of brahmacharis, young men who would go out and preach. So one day, one of them came back and told Prabhupada that he had heard a lecture by this Dr. Radhakrishnan on the Bhagavad Gita, and that he was saying on this particular verse that Krishna is not saying here that we should think of him or surrender unto him, but rather to the unborn eternal energy within him. And that's exactly violating this injunction, that there's some difference between the within and without of Krishna. So Prabhupada, he wrote in this book, he was writing articles, actually he was writing articles for, was it The Harmonist? Sajjan Atoshi, I forget. But one of them was in Bengali. These were Bengali articles that he was writing. And it was a scathing article. He got the book. I have the book. It was an English Bhagavad Gita written by this fellow. And in that purport, sure enough, he says that this. And Prabhupada got the book, and he started referring to the pages. And just blasted away that this is gross illusion to think that there's a within and without of Krishna. That beyond Krishna, there is some impersonal spirit that we really have to surrender to. So, in his Bhagavad Gita purports, in a purport in 934, he mentions this, that some fools think that we have to that there's some in something within Krishna we have to surrender to. No, it's Krishna, the person, and that's why Krishna's body, his form, is so important. We're meditating on our own bodies, the comforts, and is it beautiful enough, and all the different things. This is the bodily concept of life. So to transfer that, we have these beautiful forms that appear called the Archa Vigraha, where we can see and serve Krishna, because we can't see spirit now without gross material vision. So Krishna deigns to appear so we can see him. And the holy name itself is not different from that form. But the point is, we're meant to become absorbed. So the more you can think of Krishna's body, the better you are. The better off it is. Don't think, oh, it's a bodily concept of life. No. There are so many detailed descriptions of lotus feet, the different markings on the lotus feet, how the nails are shining, just like the moonshine, This is a verse from the Hari Bhakti Kalpalatika by an unknown author. It's a great book. It's a meditation on his feet, just the feet. Okay, it means that the toenails have this wonderful effulgent beauty, just like so many moons, very pure, pristine glow of the moon. It's coming from Krishna's lotus toenails. And it's described in the third canto, how that effulgence, when it enters your heart, it's like there's a mountain of sinful reactions in there, and this effulgence is like a thunderbolt that breaks that mountain of sin and releases you from all sin. Very important effulgence. That's just the toenails, isn't it? Let's put it in the kind of Navakamaloda Shonam Abhiramam. So Navakamala means a freshly grown lotus, and within that bluish lotus in the inside, if you ever see a lotus, there can be a very wonderful pinkish reddish color within the whorl. That's the color of the soles of the feet. So Navakamalodara, Shonama, red, Abhirama, very delightful, very attractive. The word is used here. Loka Abhirama. The Abhirama means the delight, attractive. And then the sound, how do Krishna's feet sound? Ankle bells. The golden ankle bells are tinkling very sweetly. Papande, I surrender unto those lotus feet of Achyuta, which are very soft, just like a fresh sprout, in a leaf or something. There's so many verses like that, descriptions. And that's just the beginning of the lotus feet. There's a whole description of the bottom of the soles, the markings on there. Go to the Govinda Lilamrita, every part, the ankles, the knees, the waist, everything, the heart, the arms, the face. That's the body we should be meditating on. And you forget your own body. Prabhupada described, the more you dress the deity, the more beautiful you become. It's just like a mirror. You're not worried. You know, you go on there in simple clothes, wrapped, doesn't matter. You're not worried about how you're dressed. But you become more beautiful the more beautiful you dress Krishna. Because he's the soul of the soul. You become internally beautiful, where the real beauty lies. You know? So this body, you know, what is that? Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha. That Lord Brahma, the head of our Sampradaya, he's saying basically, this Krishna, he's God. That's the first line. Ishvara Parama Krishna. The supreme Ishvara, the supreme control is Krishna. And he has a form composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. You know, it's hard to conceive of that because all we know are these forms, which are anything but eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. They're temporary, ignorant, and full of misery. So, but the pure spiritual form of Krishna, and it is a form, and form means personality and qualities and activities and names and everything that goes with a person that we have, that we know about, that Krishna has that. And everything related to that form is auspicious and transcendental. That's why, you know, why do you think we have all these little things that we have, you know? Oh, the water that washed the feet, you know, the flowers that were offered. You know, all these remnants, this gall becomes a remnant, you see. Because they take on, they're related to the body of the Lord. They're related to the personality of God. And therefore, they become spiritualized. And they can bestow auspicious. They can purify our heart when we understand or we come in contact with them. You know, the contact. Krishna consciousness is full of those things. Prasadam itself. The holy name. To ordinary people, to materialists, it seems like ordinary food, ordinary sound, ordinary statue. What are you guys so excited about? But no. Because it's been empowered by the acharyas, given, you know, you cook in such a way, you offer such a way, you act in such a way, you chant in such a way, deities, that means it's bona fide. And they're installed, you know, by a ceremony. So all of these things are ways in which Krishna reaches out to us with his personality. And it tries to attract us away from the reflection, you know, the reflection, which ultimately is so frustrating. I was speaking last night with him, on the prayers of Akrura. I've been going over them. You know, the Mrigatrishna is the mirage. Our whole life is running after different mirages, one after another, and being frustrated. Because the mirage can never give you what you're looking for. It just gives you a shadow of it. It gives you a little taste of it and makes you more frustrated. So the whole thing the mission of human life is to search for the reality. You know, asato ma sadgamaya. This is the injunction of the Vedas to all. Asato ma sadgamaya. It says, don't stay with the asat, the temporary, the unreal, the shadow, the reflection. Mirage. Come to the Sat, the true, the eternal reality, of which the mirage is simply a reflection. So Krishna's form here, now this is, of course, a heart-rending event. Krishna's disappeared, and with that disappearance, he takes Dharma and Gyan with him. There's another verse that many devotees chant, Bhadramaya chants every day, every time he gives class. Krishna swadhamo pagate dharma jnana nibisaha kalo nashta dashamesha puranako dunoditaha. You know this verse, Balaram? Okay, what's it mean?
It means that Krishna, when he disappeared, he took knowledge and religion with him.
Yeah.
But the Bhagavatam has been given in this age for people who want to find light.
What is it like, this Bhagavatam?
The sun.
The
sun.
Yeah. Arka is the sun. Right. When Krishna left and returned to his own abode, Dhamma Upagate. Swadhamma Upagate. He Dharma Jnana Divisaha. He took Dharma and Jnana with him. Whatever Krishna appeared, his mission is to reinstitute Dharma, which he had done. He succeeded, right? The Pandavas were ruling, you know. And Jnana, you know, he dissipates ignorance. He speaks the Bhagavad Gita, he speaks the Uddhava Gita. And he dissipates ignorance. So he personified. Wherever Krishna is, Dharma and Gyan must reign. You know, Dharma Gyan Abhisaha. But he took with him that. Now he's not on the planet. So how is this Dharma and Gyan going to be manifest here? Because without that, human society becomes animal society, chaotic. Look at it. Just look around. Yeah, it's just insanity. Especially the age of Kali, where the age of quarrel and conflict. You see it everywhere, from the family to the city to the country to the world. It's constant quarrel and fighting. So it's the greatest need for society is true Dharma and true Gyan, true religion and true knowledge. So what's going to happen? Kalo nashta drisham. Now, nashta drisham means we've lost our vision. You know, we're seeing, but we're not seeing. Pashana bina pashati. Our vision has been clouded and covered by ignorance and illusion. So we need a means. So the effort is this kalo nashta drisham esha puran ako adunodita. Aduna means this Bhagavatam has risen just like the sun to give knowledge and real religion to this benighted members of the Kali Yuga. So this Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. It's a manifestation of Krishna. And that's why we say, when we say that one should serve the Bhagavad, means you should serve the Bhagavatam. Anything relation to Bhagavan is called Bhagavata. So the relation, the pure Mahabhagavat, is the person Bhagavat, as well as the book Bhagavat. And that's why one of the most important aspects of devotional service is studying Bhagavatam every day. Nityam Bhagavatam means continually, every day. One of the five most important parts of bhakti. Other four being, Alec, can you name
them? Deity worship, sadhusanga.
And sadhusanga means, for those who don't know?
Association with advanced devotees. Chanting.
Chanting the holy name, and? Living in a holy place. Living in a holy place. And that's what Prabhupada said, this morning program is exactly that. We do it in a holy place. Fortunate are those who are able to live in that place. And we worship the deity with awe, with faith and veneration. That's part of it. And of course we chant the holy name associated with devotees, and we study Bhagavatam. It's an essential part of the morning program. It's just an essential part. So I'm going to stop there, leave a few minutes for Madhvacharya, if anyone has any comments or questions on this portion here. Krishna left our vision, but for those who want to see him, he can still be seen, even in this world. We can have him manifest in our hearts and in the deity, in the holy name, and in the Hare Krishna movement. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.